We talked about the need for digitization in the healthcare industry. We also spoke about the potential of genomic technology. We can offer genomic profiling to the entire world. We can't really garner the full potential of the technology if we don't have a way to actually analyze and collect all this data. And this is where really NVIDIA sees potential.
Welcome, Lise. It's great to have you on the show. How are things?
Of course. Thank you for having me. Things are going well. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Yeah, really happy to speak to you. I spoke to your colleague, Pedro, only a couple of days ago, so it's really good to speak to more of the GlobalX employees. First question then, and this is typically how we run the Opto Sessions interviews. We start with a question that focuses on a key topic of today's discussion, and then I'll circle back and cover some of your background. Perhaps you can describe why gene editing and gene therapy represents a generational investment opportunity. Just give us the elevator picture.
Absolutely. When we think about the healthcare space, obviously a lot of sort of new technologies coming about that are really changing the sort of landscape as a whole, not only in terms of how we think about developing new drugs and making them more effective and safer for patients, but also how the industry as a whole is run and how we think about even value-based care more broadly. And cell and gene therapy and gene editing more broadly is certainly one of the areas that we're most excited about. It's really changing the way we think about patient care from solely a symptomatic way of managing illnesses to really disease-modifying or treatments with curative intent coming into the market. When we think about sort of the treatments that have come to market, again, a lot of them in terms of symptomatic care, we're starting to see more and more treatments come to market that are being more effective in halting disease progression, reverting disease progression. And ultimately, our hope is that before a patient is symptomatic, if we know they have a predisposition to a certain illness or have a specific mutation, being able to address that before the patient is symptomatic really, again, changes the way we think about healthcare more broadly. And there's a lot of nuance as to how this will come to market and become widely adopted. But again, just one of the areas that really represents sort of a shift in how we think about patient care more broadly.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, I think that works well to whet listeners' appetites. And we'll get into the granular detail of a few of those points further on. But let's return to kind of your background so I can properly introduce you to the listeners. And we'll start with your time at Third Bridge. I read through your LinkedIn profile before the call. So perhaps you can just tell me how your experience at Third Bridge informed your approach in your current role and what experiences you can draw on from that role.
Yeah, absolutely. So for those that don't know, Third Bridge is a research provider offering financial research in the public equities, private equity, and fixed income sectors. I specifically cover the healthcare sector. So whether it be pharmaceutical companies, biotechnology sector, pharmaceutical services, animal health, life sciences, it was really a way for us to sort of contextualize a lot of what's happening in the industry. So whether a company came out with clinical trial results that obviously if you try and read any, don't have a PhD or not a physician, it might be a little bit difficult to understand, again, contextualizing a lot of this via the help of key opinion leaders. So again, I usually say it was a position of translating a lot of the industry jargon or industry lingo in a way that financial professionals can understand and really put that information or those insights into action. That really resonates with what we do here at GlobalX. Again, the healthcare industry in particular is quite sort of difficult sometimes when we get into the nitty gritty of the technologies and the treatments, even the regulatory landscape for how these treatments can get approval. So again, a lot of contextualization, both internally, externally, as to what's happening in these different industries and helping anyone really understand sort of value and investing in the healthcare space, and particularly genomics and biotechnology, telemedicine, digital health, et cetera. Again, just a way to sort of offer that context for people to get equally as excited about this opportunity as we are.
Yeah, absolutely. No, particularly important in this space, actually. There's so much sort of jargon and kind of complex kind of concepts and things to understand that having someone being able to properly translate that, particularly for a retail investment audience, is super important. So that's why I'm particularly excited by this discussion. But perhaps you can just take a step back and actually explain kind of how that specialism in healthcare came about.
Yeah, I will say it happened completely by accident. I have a business sort of background. Through my experience, I ended up in consulting for a little bit, particularly working with pharmaceutical companies. Really opened my eyes into the world of healthcare, and I was instantly hooked. I joined the Third Bridge team specifically to sort of expand our healthcare strategy and sort of map that out for again, expanding the value proposition for our clients. now at Global X, really excited to sort of be working on that healthcare space from more of a macro standpoint and covering the entirety of the industry, again, through our Aging Population Fund, our Genomics and Biotechnology Fund, Telemedicine, Digital Health, et cetera. And again, solely by accident, but I think it puts me in a really unique place to sort of, again, contextualize or sort of translate a lot of this industry jargon in a way that financial professionals and retail investors can again, put into practice as they look for different sort of financial opportunities or investment opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I ask everyone that comes on the show to explain what a typical day looks like for them. So you're a research analyst at Global X. So if such a thing exists, give me an outline of what a typical day might look like.
Absolutely. I will say no such thing exists, but for the most part, again, it's sort of either tracking the space, whether we see, for example, earnings or clinical trial data, and sort of understanding sort of not only the implications of the news or the developments more broadly into a specific company, but the industry as a whole, and particularly how the different sectors sort of relate to each other. That's something that's very unique to Global X. We're not necessarily constrained by geography or by sort of traditional GIX classifications. It's more about really capturing that broader sort of opportunity for these structural shifts that we're seeing across different industries in healthcare, for example, whether it's sort of tracking the cell and gene therapy space, whether it be approvals or how they come to market or the life science tools, seeing how all of these sort of interact and being able to again, show and sort of communicate that value proposition is really interesting and sort of what we focus here on a day-to-day.
Yeah, fascinating. And kind of not being constrained by that traditional industry taxonomy is well, particularly fascinating to us being a kind of thematic content provider, but also another reason that we're always really interested to speak to Global X. So let's return to the focus of today's interview then. So that's gene therapy and editing. Firstly, can you explain how the industry is moving away from disease treatment towards disease prevention?
Yeah, I'll use an example, not necessarily cell and gene therapy, but it's a really sort of an example that really resonates with everyone, particularly when we're looking at sort of the news of late. We continue to hear about therapies like Ozempic or Mounjaro that are being used for type 2 diabetes. And this is something that's really exciting for us because not only are they highly effective in treating an illness that impacts a significant proportion of the world population, but they're also seeing efficacy beyond just diabetes, particularly obesity. When we think about the number one sort of risk factor for developing type 2 diabetes, it is being overweight or being obese. And in being able to sort of attack that at the onset rather than when a patient already has significant complications that make it that much more difficult for actual treatment to be effective is really important. We're seeing that shift more broadly, not just in things like oncology or immuno diseases. But again, we're sort of seeing that in a social standpoint become more and more popular. The same thing is happening across the board. Again, in oncology alone, we're seeing significant sort of benefit to diagnosing illnesses, the earlier the better. It makes it easier for a physician to actually be able to prescribe the right treatment and being able to accurately see an effect from those treatments. But we're also seeing it beyond sort of the oncology space in terms of genetic medicines. And this is where cell and gene therapy comes into play. We're seeing that, for example, through sort of gene-modified treatments, we can get a really substantial sort of potential for patients in terms of their day-to-day lives. When we think about something like, for example, hemophilia, sickle cell disease, these are illnesses that are highly cumbersome. If we're looking at, for example, something like sickle cell disease, a patient has to get a transfusion every so often. This is highly cumbersome and quite expensive. Have treatments coming to market that are having curative intent and are hoped to be a one-and-done sort of approach that has significant impact for patients. It's still early days. In the U.S., we currently have 22 approved cell and gene therapies in the market. We're hoping to see that increase and potentially expand to not just these illnesses that are perhaps less common, but also making their way into more common illnesses. There's studies currently being done for Alzheimer's, for example, as to how we can implement these technologies in a way that can hopefully sort of either prevent or halt Alzheimer's in patients. And again, something that we're really excited about is to the potential for cell and gene therapies and a host of different illnesses.
And you kind of spoke to this point here, but just keen to flesh this out. So if we imagine a timeline with this pivot from disease treatment towards disease prevention at the far end of it, whereabouts are we on that timeline and what key milestones or developments have shifted us along that journey?
It's a great question. I will say, in terms of milestones first, one is diagnosis, whether it is earlier detection or understanding of hereditary predispositions for illnesses. I will say that's the main crux. Again, the farther along a patient is in their illness journey or in terms of disease progression, the harder it is to treat, obviously. Something like cancer, for example, far too often it is diagnosed too late, and there's a couple of reasons why. One is the sort of lack of availability of screening options for the vast majority of cancer types. We know that, for example, colorectal cancer, breast cancer, have very commonly known and utilized screening methods. If you think about lung cancer, less so, et cetera, right? So if we're sort of mapping a way for prevention or even just improving the overall outcome for patients, disease diagnosis is really important. And we're at a point where, for example, liquid biopsy is coming into the market. When we think about sort of the traditional screening method, again, it's very specific. Either you get a colonoscopy for colorectal cancer or et cetera, right? We're moving towards an era of a liquid biopsy, which is a blood-based test. Essentially, if you go to your physician for your annual checkup, they'll regularly take blood. That blood sample can actually also be screened for tumor shedding or tumor DNA or all of these other biomarkers that can potentially point to a patient having sort of early signs of cancer. That really changes the paradigm, right? It's easily accessible. It's more cost effective. It's more scalable. We're not necessarily adding on one additional sort of task for a patient over a certain age to have to do every X amount of years, right? It's sort of a way to have a more comprehensive sort of screening method. And that's really going to change sort of the broader landscape. We're also seeing sort of blood-based tests come about for hereditary predispositions. If we know a patient has sort of an increased likelihood of getting X amount or X type of cancer, that sort of, again, raises a flag to the physicians of saying this patient will need more frequent testing. They'll need sort of more personalized care across the board. So I will say this is one of those sort of markers that we're really hopeful for in terms of becoming more sort of utilized across the board, and it'll really change the way we think about treatment. Something else that we also consider is in terms of the adoption of a lot of these technologies, thinking about prevention sort of over the symptomatic care of an illness is, of course, the wider availability and understanding of genomic sort of predispositions or even mutations. A patient might not necessarily have something in their DNA pointing that they might have a mutated protein in their body, but if it is present and that is particularly sort of leading the sort of spreading or growth of cancer, that's something that's really changing the way of just not all cancer patients are treated the same or all lung cancer patients are treated the same, but specifically what is actually being sort of driving the illness. And this genomic technology is currently limited in the way it's utilized at a patient level, and we're really hopeful for what that will mean in terms of having wider availability of this technology for every patient to have that sort of level of detail in terms of their genetic makeup and what's actually causing illnesses.
Yeah, absolutely. That personalization sort of element is pretty exciting as well. And we'll probably get onto that when we discuss a few key players in this space as well. But I think now we've set the context, we can move on to an event that you attended, or GlobalX attended earlier this year. That was the JP Morgan Healthcare Conference. So this conference, for anyone that doesn't know, hosts the newest developments in healthcare innovation, sets the tone for the year ahead. But before we get into any sort of detail, what were your key takeaways for that event?
Absolutely. I will say that there was quite a few, but the main one that stuck out that perhaps sort of underappreciated by someone that doesn't necessarily attend these events is the work being done by non-traditional healthcare companies to improve the healthcare system. NVIDIA was present talking about their sort of potential for artificial intelligence and drug discovery, which we'll get into in a second, of course. But we're also seeing, for example, companies like Instacart, a grocery delivery service that is really expanding their role in the healthcare system, whether it be through a physician setting guidelines as to a patient after surgery of what foods would best serve that patient in recovery and beyond. They're sort of considering food as medicine, right? And these are just a couple of the companies that were there that, again, aren't traditional healthcare companies that are playing a more active role in the healthcare industry. And again, we view this as a key driver for again, more personalized medicine, but also a more comprehensive approach to whether it be technology. We're seeing a lot of focus from traditional tech companies in digitizing the healthcare industry. Spoiler alert, the healthcare industry is in severe need of digitization. Just to give you a figure, 80% of medical communications in the US are either done via snail mail or fax, a staggering figure. And when we think about the sort of broad-reaching potential of this and being able to utilize or leverage this data for, again, driving more personalized care will be really key. So that's one of the main things that really stood out at the JP Morgan Healthcare Conference.
Yeah, fantastic. And we'll dig into a few key players, as I say, but perhaps was there a particular company or management presentation that excited you most? Perhaps it was one you're less familiar with or were less familiar with, or one that our listeners might not be likely to have heard of?
Yeah, absolutely. I will also say I was at the American Society of Clinical Oncology meeting in June, sort of the largest oncology conference. And I will say that both presentations from this company, Tempus, were really impressive. It's a private company. Most people might not have heard of it, but it is a diagnostics company. So if you're a patient with your physician trying to figure out, again, what mutation is sort of at the core of driving an illness, you can send in your sample to Tempus. They'll run all of these diagnostic tests, send it back to you, and again, give you more of a sort of insight as to your potential pathway as a patient. What clinical trials could you participate in? What are the best practices that sort of at a national level or global level can be implemented that the physician might not be familiar with? But also what they're doing is sort of utilizing that information, that structure from a patient standpoint to help pharmaceutical companies develop better drugs. All of this information and insight gathered at a patient level is then being utilized at a pharma level to prioritize what illnesses a pharma company should be working on for potential development, to sort of outline potential benefit or potential patients that could see a benefit from experimental treatment. And really, they're creating this really cool ecosystem where all of this information is being fed in and playing a role for better patient care, for better sort of recruitment of clinical trials, for better development of preclinical drugs. And again, it's sort of a self-containing sort of ecosystem that I'm really excited about to see be implemented, again, at a patient level through their diagnostics, and at a pharma level to see if they can sort of accelerate the development of new drugs and hopefully see an increased sort of benefit or efficacy from these investigational drugs.
Yeah, fascinating. Okay, well, let's move on and use that as a juncture to talk about the key public companies in this space. Illumina, first of all, have estimated that gene sequencing, that as a market and the potential opportunity there, will be upwards of $120 billion by 2027. So firstly, to what extent is that a realistic prediction? And perhaps you can talk to how GlobalX actually go about sizing markets and opportunities like this.
No, that's a good question. When we think about the genomic sequencing market, I will provide the caveat that this sort of is the sort of lever for all of these other technologies to come about, whether it's cell and gene therapy, whether it's new diagnostic capabilities like a biopsy. So when we're talking about the market size for genomic sequencing, again, pulling that lever, opening that door for all of these individual subsequent markets that are going to come about. Do I believe that the Illumina figure is accurate? Absolutely. When we think about the potential for this technology, again, the hope is that it is available for every patient when they go to a physician. Currently, a lot of this technology is being utilized at a research setting, so to develop better drugs during COVID-19, to track pathogens by academic centers or by government entities. It's not necessarily something that's available at a patient level when they go to their primary care physician or when they go to a hospital because they're trying to get diagnosed with XYZ. And again, this is where we see a lot of potential. Currently, in terms of market penetration, we're still very early days, about 7% currently in terms of market penetration, and we see that increasing, particularly as it becomes sort of more accessible at a patient level. There's a few different factors that go into this. And I will say the number one factor is price of genomic sequencing. If we think about sort of this technology being validated by pharmaceutical companies, by government agencies, it's really about accuracy of the technology, right? And making sure that this information is as accurate as possible if we're basing all of these decisions on this information, right? That's been validated. And we're seeing wide-scale adoption of the technology in these settings. Now it's how do we make it in terms of a price point that's accessible for the vast majority of individuals to benefit from? And this is where we're seeing this sort of play a role. And again, it's feeding into the market size. We absolutely think that the genomic sequencing market has significant potential. But again, we're hopeful for seeing that price continue to decrease to actually be able to see the broader benefit of it materialize.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned 7%. Penetration so far, Illumina, I think, expect that to double by 2027. But another important figure here is Illumina's market share within this exciting space. I think in GlobalX's review of the healthcare JP Morgan conference, you mentioned 70% market share. So they're obviously a leader in the space. And actually, have they now established a point where it's really hard for challengers to disrupt that market leadership? Or actually, are there emerging contenders you see in the space at the moment?
There's certainly emerging contenders. We're seeing sort of more traditional life science companies actually start offering similar technologies. So we know Thermo Fisher, for example, has a significant role in the industry, and their portfolio is significant across clinical trials, drug manufacturing, other tools, et cetera. We're sort of seeing more sort of engagement from companies like Thermo Fisher. We're also seeing, for example, international companies start playing a more significant role. BGI sort of expected to play a particular role in terms of that price piece that we were just chatting through, and sort of making it available more broadly, particularly in the US, for example, in 2023. We're also, for example, seeing long read sequencing companies, and we can get into the nuance of what that actually means, but we're seeing these sort of converge, right? Very simplistically, when you try and sequence DNA, DNA is really long strands of information, right? So we have to break that up. Currently, technology isn't sort of available to sequence it in one long continuous string. So you have to break up that string of DNA. The smaller the piece of DNA, that's mostly known as short read sequencing. The larger the piece, it's long read sequencing. And they serve different purposes, right? Some people sort of have the fear that long read sequencing, which is a newer sort of technology, will cannibalize short read sequencing. In our view, that won't necessarily happen in the short term. We view potential for both of them to coexist and sort of find their role, both in terms of that research and that clinical setting. But we're seeing sort of increased conversion. We'll chat through some of the companies like PacBio, but they're also coming into market with short read sequencers, and we see potential for them to also succeed. Again, the industry is very significant in terms of that market opportunity, and penetration is still quite low. So we see potential for all of these companies really to find sort of their niche in terms of adoption moving forward.
Yeah, fantastic. And as you say, we'll get onto PacBio in a second, because they're obviously another interesting player in this particular space. But we stay on Illumina for a second. The Global X review of the event talks about Illumina's earnings coming in relatively flat last year. How integral is their product, NovaSeq X, to the targeted 7 to 10% year-over-year growth that they expect this year? And perhaps before we get into that, you can briefly explain what that product is for anyone that's unfamiliar with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Their NovaSeq product is essentially their next generation short read sequencing platform. And when we think about sort of the potential for different products, whether it be in terms of throughput, price, et cetera, it sort of really opens the door again for tailored sort of products for different client types, whether it be drug discovery, patient care, et cetera. Their NovaSeq product is essentially their highest throughput product with the goal of a $200 per genome sort of analysis. To put this into context, the average at the moment is about $600 globally. In 2002, this was $100 million per genome sequence, so it's certainly gone down quite a bit. But the NovaSeq X essentially has the goal of actually offering these services for $200 per genome. So again, it's sort of making it more accessible in terms of short-read sequencing at a patient level, and again, sort of opening that door for sort of local laboratories, local hospitals to actually be able to afford and have a sequencing platform with the throughput in the price point that make it available for a greater population of patients. When we think about the potential growth for them, this is quite significant. Whether I see it in terms of their biggest potential growth sort of driver, I see a lot of potential in them sort of expanding their product lineup into long read sequencing, which they've already started to work towards and are starting to offer. But again, sort of one additional sort of piece of the puzzle for them to have the most comprehensive sort of product lineup in that short read sequencing space.
Got it. Okay. And I want to finish each of these company sections by asking a question about time horizon. So for an investment in Illumina or the DNA sequencing technology space at large, what is the time horizon for an investment like that?
Absolutely. I will say that particularly Illumina and the DNA sequencing space is at the most sort of mature point in the sort of what we call genomics. Genomics more broadly is obviously DNA sequencing, but we're starting to see increased conversion with what they call multi-omic analysis. It includes RNA analysis, protein analysis, epigenomics, which is essentially analyzing potential lifestyle choices or environmental factors and their potential sort of role in illnesses. Again, that DNA sequencing portion is the most mature. It sort of served as a proof of concept for the value of this technology. And we're, again, very hopeful in terms of what this will mean. But again, we see a sort of the other sort of technologies like proteomics and transcriptomics to have sort of a longer term sort of investment timeline compared to genomics. We are excited to see sort of what Illumina's sort of rollout of long read sequencing technology will do for their annual growth in 2024, say. But again, sort of the most mature sort of segment in the genomics industry more broadly.
All right, that's Illumina covered. So PacBio, the next company I want to discuss. The investment case here seems to revolve around the installed base of their long read sequencing analyzers. So to start this section, and we touched on them a little bit, perhaps let's flesh out what those products are for anyone that's unfamiliar with.
So I spoke to the difference between short read sequencing and long read sequencing. What I usually say is short read sequencing is essentially you have a very specific question. Is this question yes or no, right? Short read sequencing might be a little bit more helpful in that regard. Again, if we're starting if we're thinking, for example, of diagnosing a patient, yes or no for a particular illness, short read sequencing might be very helpful. Long read sequencing is a little bit different, right? It is, we don't have the full map and we're trying to sort of discover what is left, right? So again, it plays a more significant role in that research setting. I'll just put this into context. In the US, the Human Genome Project started in 1990 with the goal of mapping out the human genome. That sort of project actually concluded in 2003 with 92% of the human genome mapped. The reason sort of that last 8% wasn't able to actually be deciphered is because long read sequencing technology was not available yet. That actually concluded in 2022 with the advent of all this technology. Like, if we don't know what we don't know, it sort of limits our availability to sort of develop new drugs or even diagnose patients or understand sort of what specific mutations might cause or lead to later on for a patient. So long read sequencing is sort of, again, we don't know what we don't know. Long read sequencing is there to sort of map this out for us. And again, they play a very significant role in terms of total market share. The technology is much newer, so they play sort of a smaller role in terms of the total market at the moment. But we're very hopeful as to what this means, particularly in terms of adoption for drug discovery. And again, we see significant potential here. I'll put this into context in terms of what this means for patients. Sometimes we'll have patients go into genomic profiling, and they'll get, for example, a flag saying this is a variant of unknown significance. There's something in your genome that isn't necessarily common, but we don't know what that might mean. Via scale and via sort of the adoption of technology like long-read sequencing, this is where we hope to see sort of increased clarity as to what all of these mutations might actually entail for a patient. So that's sort of the role that Pacific Biosciences or PacBio sort of plays in the industry more broadly. And again, we're sort of very encouraged by their lineup of long-read sequencers. And again, as I mentioned earlier, their entry into the short-read sequencing space to have a more comprehensive sort of approach to sequencing more broadly.
Yeah, great. And you touched on sort of market penetration there. And to talk to product adoption more generally, I suppose their installed base, I read, was about 37% last year. Can you talk to us about how that's trending this year and how you expect it to trend moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I will say when we consider, for example, the adoption for something like Pacific Biosciences with a product launch in 2023 at the beginning of the year, that sort of figure of installed base growth for 2022 is quite impressive. But we have to also consider that a lot of places actually hold off on their purchasing decisions solely because the new product is coming out and they want the newest sort of most innovative product. So the data we've seen so far from Pacific Biosciences in the first half of this year is quite encouraging. And we've already seen them also take moves in terms of they had already taken a pre-existing acquisition to sort of expand that short read sequencing sort of strategy. They just made another acquisition. They're being quite active in that regard to, again, make sure that they have as comprehensive of a lineup. PacBio is really impressive in terms of their accuracy. It's actually the most accurate long read sequencing technology on the market right now with 99.9% accuracy. And again, that's sort of leading them to a point where they're very highly regarded in terms of their potential. And again, we're excited to see what comes about in terms of their additional sort of product adoption.
Fantastic. Okay. And I promise to finish every company section with this question around time horizon. So for an investment in PacBio or long read sequencing technology more generally, in your opinion, what's the ideal time horizon here?
It's certainly longer than for example, short read sequencing. Again, I think this will come about in terms of we're talking about generating data, right? And a lot of this sort of proof of concept or sort of catalyst to adopt a lot of this technology is the insights that we can garner from the data from a genomic analysis. This also comes from scale, right? We talked about, for example, price being a potential sort of hindrance in terms of shorter term adoption, particularly for long read sequencing, since it stands at a higher price point. It will take a little bit longer for us to sort of see adoption. Again, we're starting to see increased conversion between RNA sequencing and DNA sequencing and beyond. So again, a longer sort of time horizon, but we're also seeing, for example, companies like Oxford Nanopore come about with even larger or sort of longer read lengths. They call them base pairs from DNA, up to 2.3 million base pairs in sort of one continuous sequence. That's also really impressive. So we're hopeful to see what sort of the accuracy and the read length will continue to trend like. But again, sort of a longer term adoption timeline compared to, for example, short read sequencing or a much larger company like Illumina, for example.
Got it. Okay, perfect. So to finish this section, then we'll move on to NVIDIA, a company you mentioned at the start of the interview. I'm keen to understand the part that NVIDIA play in the overall investment case here. So firstly, perhaps you can explain their historical involvement in healthcare and genomic tech, and then we can move on to what they're doing today.
Absolutely. Again, perhaps sort of a confusing a company to be speaking about when we're talking about genomic sequencing and sort of the market opportunity for that, since they're not a traditional healthcare company. I spoke about, for example, at JP Morgan, sort of the increased presence by non-traditional healthcare companies, and NVIDIA is certainly sort of at top of mind when we think about non-traditional healthcare companies sort of expanding their role in the industry. Traditionally, they have utilized sort of their capabilities to analyze radiology, whether it be an MRI or an X-ray, essentially utilizing their technology and more broadly artificial intelligence to sort of map out or pinpoint abnormalities in scans that might otherwise go undetected, which is really impressive. It's sort of the most mature segment of the healthcare industry when it comes to artificial intelligence. And again, has really sort of familiarized the industry with the potential of artificial intelligence. What they're now sort of speaking to is that we talked about the need for digitization in the healthcare industry. We also spoke about the sort of potential of genomic technology. We can sort of offer genomic profiling to the entire world. We can't really garner the full potential of the technology if we don't have a way to actually analyze and collect all this data. Currently, unfortunately, again, it's either not sort of prevalent enough, or we don't have the computing power to actually sort of process all of the sort of benefit of genomic sequencing. And this is where really NVIDIA sees potential, utilizing a lot of this technology, particularly to drive drug discovery, essentially having information from electronic medical records, genomic profiling, clinical trial data, prescription data, et cetera, to sort of feed into sort of models to help predict more better efficacy for drugs, a better safety profile for drugs that can actually serve multiple purposes from the onset. So again, pharmaceutical companies are developing more effective drugs before they come to market. Again, being able to sort of prioritize development of drugs and being able to do more given sort of the percentage of preclinical drugs that don't actually end up showing a benefit to patients, again, it sort of opens up the industry significantly.
Yeah, and to underline the significance of this industry as well, I read that healthcare is now the largest data generating industry in the world. So, and the genomics related income for NVIDIA is already making up around 50% of their healthcare related revenue overall, which is really interesting. And I wonder then, where do you expect the latter to significantly contribute to the company's bottom line? When is that actually going to happen, or is it already actually making a big part of their revenue?
When we think about sort of the potential for NVIDIA, again, significant opportunity across the board. I will say healthcare is an industry that in need of technology like NVIDIA or companies like NVIDIA paying attention to it. I will say it's sort of a longer time frame for them to be widely adopted. They, for example, note that 0% of current drugs going into clinical treatment. So being investigated through artificial intelligence or machine learning models and in animals, for example, before being tested in humans, 0% of the treatments going into in human clinical trials are currently done with artificial intelligence. They predict that number to be 30% by 2025. So again, significant potential for them to grow. But again, I think there'll be a lot of back-end work, whether it is in terms of their genomic sort of role and being able to sort of comprehend and analyze all genomic data coming about. But again, more broadly, being able to analyze electronic medical records, prescription data, et cetera, the more comprehensive sort of analysis we have at the onset of sort of drug discovery, again, the more efficacious drugs will actually be when they go into in-human clinical trials. So whether it's going to be a sort of a revenue generating opportunity for NVIDIA is no doubt. Frankly, I still think that the opportunity is sort of underestimated, again, given the sort of digitization that needs to happen in the healthcare industry as a whole and the potential that they have. But we're very excited to see what comes about. And then just again, to put this into context, less than 0.1% of the human population so far has gotten their genome sequenced. Again, when we're already saying that sort of the computing power for the industry isn't enough to actually analyze the genomic data we have, less than 0.1% of the human population, when we sort of increase this significantly and make this available to patients across the board, and that infrastructure from companies like NVIDIA needs to be there for us to actually make all of this sort of adoption worth it. So again, very excited to see sort of the role that NVIDIA continues to play in the industry.
Yeah, fantastic. Really interesting. Okay, well, I think the perfect way to end this then is to talk about ways people can gain investment exposure to all of the opportunities that we've discussed. So I want to finish by talking about the Global X Genomic and Biotechnology ETF, ticker GNOM. How much of the overall value chain that we've discussed and kind of gone through so far today and the opportunities we've discussed so far would people get exposure to through an investment in that fund?
Absolutely. I will sort of provide a little bit of context. We obviously spoke in terms of cell and gene therapies and the way we think about changing the way we treat patients. And then we spoke about the tools that are sort of making this a reality. The Genomics and Biotechnology Fund from Global X is a really unique way to sort of capture all of this. Again, life science tools and sequencing technology and sort of that biotechnology and pharmaceutical industry have a very symbiotic relationship. And that's what genome really captures, whether it's gene editing and genomic technologies, sequencing technology and computational sort of genomics or diagnostics, all of these play a significant role and they play it together, right? So that's really what genome captures. We have, for example, exposure to small biotech companies that are working on gene editing. The first gene editing treatment is actually being sort of evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration here in the U.S. this year with a potential approval by end of year. We also, for example, I spoke to now 22 approved cell and gene therapies in the market in the U.S. Just this year, we've seen 4, so certainly potential for significant more approvals through the end of the year. But again, that's what genome sort of looks to capture. And again, it's a symbiotic relationship between all of these sort of segments of the healthcare industry that traditionally are thought of individually or separately. And genome really offers sort of a way to capture sort of a piece of the pie of all of these segments together.
With that in mind, then, how does that exposure differ from peer or competitor offerings in this space?
Absolutely. I spoke to, for example, sort of the traditional way of thinking about the industry via a traditional sort of sector classification system. We really sort of look for companies that derive 50% plus revenue from any of the 4 categories, genomic medicines, gene editing, gene sequencing, or computational genomics, as a way to sort of capture that growth. Again, traditionally, when we see, for example, healthcare innovation funds, they're either traditionally more broadly healthcare or specifically biotech. And again, I think genome is very uniquely positioned to capture sort of the entire ecosystem that's really changing the way we think about healthcare. And again, offering a structural shift to sort of diagnostics, patient care, et cetera.
And to finish then, how has this fund performed over the last 12 months?
I will provide the caveat that when we think about the Genomics and Biotechnology Fund, obviously these are quite growthy companies in sort of fundamentally. And when we think about the broader sort of market right now, sort of more focused in terms of de-risking, for example. So we have seen performance, for example, in genome lag, But again, we view this as a really interesting and sort of unique opportunity to enter the space solely because, again, these fundamental sort of shifts in the healthcare space, they're going to happen, right? They're going to materialize. And again, not only do they present a really unique sort of investment opportunity, but again, the hope is to improve patient care across the board. And there's significant sort of tailwinds to the healthcare industry that will force these to materialize, particularly in areas like oncology, Alzheimer's. And we're already starting to see, again, proof of concept from these treatments and these technologies in sort of smaller patient populations. So again, sort of performance from genome has lagged. And again, in terms of valuations, we see a really significant sort of entry point for investing in the space. And again, the fundamentals, we're very encouraged by adoption of sequencing technology, very encouraged by sort of the green lights we've seen from regulatory bodies in the US and abroad for solid gene therapies. And again, sort of a very unique way to sort of capture the growth and that structural shift from the healthcare industry more broadly.
Yeah, fascinating. I think that's a nice summary of the opportunity and therefore a nice takeaway, I think, to end on. That just leaves me to say thank you very much for joining me on the show, Lise. It's been a real pleasure.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.